Good morning. It's 9:04, Wednesday, December 7th. I'm going to call to order our city council briefing meeting. I'd like to start with Judge Hill leading us in an invocation, and I will do the pledge.
Good, gracious, and almighty God, God of yesterday, God of today, and God of tomorrow, we, your created people, pause now and humble ourselves before your awesome and magnificent presence. We praise you because you're God, and we give you thanks that you have allowed us to be in this place one more time. God, I ask for your wisdom, courage, and guidance for us, the leaders whom you have privileged to be in this place. But God, I ask you to move beyond us, the leaders. Move to our staff, all of those who work with us in this place, every single person, God, from the mayor to the men and women who clean the bathrooms. Touch us, each and every one of us, where we have the greatest need. Lift us up. Give us the strength and the courage to keep putting one foot in front of the other, knowing, God, that you are with us, that your mercies are brand new every morning, and that you will carry us through. Guide us this day and be with us. This is our prayer. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. We will start with our morning speakers. Leading that off, I'd like to introduce Ron Bartles, who will be speaking on behalf of the Works Wonder program. If you'll want to just grab, okay, and we would, you've got a couple of minutes. They want to say thank you, I think, to the city of Dallas. So please give us your presentation.
Thank you very much. Mayor Rawlings, members of the City Council, we are here today to recognize the City of Dallas, not only for your participation in the State Youth Works Wonders program, but that you indeed are a leader in the employment of individuals with disabilities. Individuals with disabilities across the state of Texas and citizens of Dallas. The State Youth Program is a legislated program that provides employment opportunities. It is a mechanism that has employed individuals with disabilities in the state of Texas for over 34 years. Out of all persons that are affected with unemployment, individuals with disabilities have the highest rate of unemployment. The state of Texas is a leader among the states in providing employment opportunities in the state of Texas. Over 6,500 individuals with disabilities are employed in this program, producing products and services. In order to be successful, the program must have community rehabilitation programs where individuals with disabilities can be employed. In the city of Dallas, we are indeed fortunate to have community rehabilitation programs. And here to also recognize the city from the Dallas Lighthouse for the Blind, their executive director, Nancy Perkins. From LifeNet Vocational, their vocational director, Joseph Garcia. And from A Lift for Life, we have Clarence Giddens. These people and their organizations do an excellent job in training, in supervision, and employing individuals with disabilities. Also present from TIBH is our staff from, or part of our staff from Austin, Marie Richter, Roxy Van Loo, and our local representatives, Danny Hill, Rod Connolly, and Catherine Jones. These individuals and their organizations work together in these employment opportunities. The city of Dallas is a top 10 purchaser of services provided by individuals with disabilities. These individuals are employed on contracts that you outsource. Without these jobs, these disabled citizens of Dallas would not have jobs. Through these contracts, the city purchases needed services at a fair market price, and your specifications are being met. It is with a great deal of pride that we recognize the fact that Dallas accomplishes this by employing individuals with disabilities, and you are a leader in the state in doing this. At this time, I would like to introduce Mr. John Luna. John is a resident of Euless, and he recently retired after 37 years with Dallas MetroCrest Services. Mr. Luna also serves on the governor's appointed Texas Council of Purchasing from People with Disabilities, and he not only serves on that council for 15 years, he's also the chairman. The council oversees this program for the legislature and for the governor's office. And Mr. Luna will present the award at this time, Mayor. And our congratulations to you, the City of Dallas, for your dedication and commitment to employ individuals with disabilities.
And for the record, I retired from Dallas MetroCare Services with that. Mayor, I would like to read the plaque. The Texas State Youth Works Wonders Program, the 2011 Customer Appreciation Award presented to the City of Dallas in recognition of your dedication and purchasing to the Texas State Youth Works Program. Your city's participation in this program has provided meaningful employment opportunities to many Dallas citizens with disabilities. Presented today, December 2011. And we thank you, and we're very proud to give this to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you for all of you guys do. You know, we are a big believer in diversity here at the City of Dallas, and you represent a diverse group, I mean, a group that's important to that diversity. These people can do so much for the city, and you give them a reason to get up every day and know that they can add value. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Yes, number one, thank you so much. It's an honor for the City of Dallas to receive this award. Number two, I think it's either 1 out of 10, and some people say 1 out of 7. I have folks with, y'all, we use the word disabilities. I think the real word is special abilities.
Right.
And that's what y'all do out there. Y'all find their special abilities that they have and go out there and hire them, because you know what they're special. Everybody's special. Everybody's got an ability, and everybody can do something. And it's folks like you that take that 1 out of 7, that 1 out of 10, and go out there, because those folks also have parents, relatives, and everybody else that are out there pulling for them, helping them, clapping along the way. So it's an honor to receive that award. But more important, it's just an honor to be in y'all's presence for what y'all are doing for these folks with special abilities. Many of the folks around this council have said, and we've done, I know in March we have the March for Respect that goes on.
Right.
It's a big event, and we'll continue to clap and be part of that. So y'all just keep rolling right along, because, again, special abilities, special abilities, special abilities. That's what it's all about. So thank y'all so much.
Thank you, Captain.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ms. Rios?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your first speaker is Carol Hopkins, followed by Trina Trish, Zechariah Vasquez, and Cooper Caraway. Those will be your four speakers this morning. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending a meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Again, your first speaker is Carol Hopkins. Ms. Hopkins, you do have 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. If you will please address your comments to Mayor Rawlings.
Yes, I would just like to bring about some things that have really annoyed me with the city sending people into my home to do work. It's been a real tragic. They came in and put in a unit in my home, an air conditioning unit, and they put in a unit that was too large, so it just kind of messed up the electrical system. And then they came back in with a grant and to redo the electrical system. And it was a nightmare. They bursted a pipe in my air conditioner, and the water just went all over. So there are places under my cabinet. One of the men from the city, Mr. Chapman, he came in and he pulled out all of this wet sheetrock, and it just a real mess. And in the hallway, when I walked down on the flooring, I could hear that water. I didn't know what it was at the time, but when he took that sheetrock out from under the cabinet, I realized the water had just seeped in different places. So you walk on it, and the flooring is a mess. So the flooring is warped. And then in the attic, the water was so bad in the attic that it's out of the insulation. A lot of it had to come out, and they didn't get the insulation back in right. So there are lots of problems that they've caused in my house. And how can they send people out? And those people, they don't have to be accountable. You know, they tear up something in the house and say, read your contract, it's on you. So I need to get some help in my house to get these things addressed.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Hopkins, I appreciate your coming down this morning. However, I wanted the record to be clear that the staff has worked with you, that they have attempted to correct all of the issues that you have raised. You refused to allow the contractor to come into your home and make the necessary corrections. The staff continue to offer their services. If you want assistance and you're willing to allow the folks to come in and make the corrections, you need to be in touch with the staff people, Mr. Salisbury or Mr. Serrano, and I believe you have those numbers. I'm not asking for your response. You need to contact either Mr. Salisbury or Mr. Serrano. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Next speaker.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Trina Trish. Zechariah Vasquez will follow.
Good morning to the mayor and to the city council and everyone under the sound of my voice. I was told that you all did receive this special invitation that I gave to you. I will be performing at the Downtown Dallas Library on Friday from 11 to 2. You all will be the opening act. I told Ms. Rios how I was going to imitate her. Nevertheless, I do hope you come. This is a part of my work. I'll be reciting some of my poetry. This is some of the poems and different things that I've done. African American, which was black in 1997, and I changed the wording to African American in 2007 when President Barack was running for office. I'm going to do a spoof on him and his temporary shelter at the White House. The policeman that I spoke to said, the president, I said, well, there are some Republicans just thinking it's a temporary shelter. How about that? Nevertheless, these are parts of what I do in my business. Trinity Church Teaching Ministry, CEO, founder. I've given you all newsletters and everything else. In this newsletter, what I did was I highlighted not only what's going on with the shelters here, but from something off the internet, from Oprah Winfrey to Steve Jobs to J.K. Rowling, entrepreneur success stories are the stuff from which American dreams are made up. Much like these famous names, millionaires. Thanks to hard work, determination, and sound advice from mentors, friends, and family, they've been able to build thriving businesses from the ground up. The road has been bumpy. In fact, some of these people were homeless during their early years. Everybody know about Tyler Perry and Madea, but he ain't the only one. Needless to say, there are problems with a shelter that if you own your own business, they still won't recognize it. It's a problem with a shelter that if it's cold outside, and shelter only means covering, has nothing to do with time and temperature, when you are trying to advance yourself, that they are putting you out and hindering you from work. There's a shelter right now that will not acknowledge my business, yet they put up my newsletters and they have my flyer right now. I say, wait, I can't come in at a certain time. Can you please acknowledge my business so you can save me a place to stay? They say, no, you out there on your own. How about that? I think you all need to talk to these shelters and see that we are into the empowering business, and as many that want to be off the tax burden list and on the tax release list, you should give them priority. How about that? God bless you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Zechariah Vasquez. Zechariah Vasquez, not present. Cooper Caraway. Cooper Caraway, not present. That concludes your speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
We proceed now with your approval of the minutes of the November 16, 2011 City Council meeting.
Do I hear a motion to approve? No. Moved and second. Do we have any further discussion, edits? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you. Item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. We do have several appointments this morning, so I'll read through those 40 names that I have for you. To the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission, Ben M. Davis Sr. is nominated by Councilmember Cadane. To the Animal Shelter Commission is Amanda K. Lawson. To fill the licensed veterinarian category, nominated by Councilmember Allen. Belinda Ortiz is nominated by Councilmember Hunt to fill the general public category. To the Board of Adjustment, Johnny Goins for Panel A is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins. Samuel A. Gillespie for Panel B is nominated by Councilmember Cadane. Jordan L. Switzer to Panel A is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Cultural Affairs Commission, Kurt Watkins as a cultural volunteer experience is nominated by Councilmember Davis. Lark Montgomery as an interested citizen is nominated by Councilmember Coop. Roger Carroll, Performing Arts category, is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. Catherine Cuellas, as an interested citizen, is nominated by Mayor Rawlings. To the Community Development Commission, James Tim James is nominated by Councilmember Allen. Pam Gerber is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the City Planning and Zoning Commission, Robert Opti is nominated by Councilmember Caraway. Sally B. Wolfish is nominated by Councilmember Grayson. To the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board, Mario A. Gutierrez is nominated by Councilmember Alonzo. Winnie Dixon is nominated by Councilmember Davis. To the Landmark Commission, Luis Cruz is nominated by Councilmember Davis to fill the Historic Preservation Experience category. To the Municipal Library Board, Alma R. Espinosa is nominated by Councilmember Alonzo. Stephen Bagley is nominated by Councilmember Davis. And James Edgar Ed Palmer is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, Jasmine Brand is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Park and Recreation Board, Lawrence S. Jones is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. To the Senior Affairs Commission, Betty Huey is nominated by Councilmember Davis. Sidney K. Kay is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. Both fill the 55 years of age plus category. South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, Maurice Franklin, to fill the nonprofit management category, is nominated by Councilmember Griggs. Kenneth Smith is nominated by Councilmember Davis to fill the housing category. To the Board of Adjustment alternate members, Danny A. Scott is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. To the Civil Service Board, Flora Hernandez is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. To the Housing Finance Corporation Board, Jim Harp is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. To the Police and Fire Welfare Fund Board, Scott Griggs is nominated by Mayor Rawlings as the City Council appointee. To the Reinvestment Zone 6 Board Farmers Market, Brent Combs fills the owner property in the district category, nominated by Councilmember Cadane. Gary Sibley, as a registered voter, is nominated by Councilmember Cadane. Neil Sleeper, as a registered voter, is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Reinvestment Zone 8 Board Design District, Pat Priest, as a registered voter, is nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. B.H. Mike Morgan, as owner property in RV area, is nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Reinvestment Zone 9 Board of Hickory Meadow, Kevin Felger, as a registered voter, is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. To the Reinvestment Zone 15 Board Fort Worth Avenue, Angela Gonzalez, is nominated by Councilmember Alonzo. Also nominated by Councilmember Alonzo is Jerry Nicholson to fill the registered voter category. To the Reinvestment Zone 17 Board TOD, Justin Judd L. Pankey is a registered voter, is nominated by Councilmember Hunt, and James Fry also is a registered voter, is also nominated by Councilmember Hunt. Both are your nominees this morning.
Move to approve.
We have a motion and a second. Ms. Davis.
Yes, on the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund, what is the difference between the nonprofit management and the housing?
I'll need to find those categories if you don't mind.
Because the reason I said that, since Mr. Smith lives in South Dallas, and this is a South Dallas Trust Fund board, I would like to put him on the nonprofit management if there is a difference.
All right. Let me get back to you on that, Councilmember Davis,
okay.
And we'll certainly follow up on that.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Thank you.
What? Are we going to need to amend this? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. If she can't tell me the difference, and so I would like to come back to that and put him on the nonprofit management.
So would you make a motion to amend this with pulling him off?
No, I don't want to pull him off. I need to make an amendment to put him on the nonprofit management side.
Well, Mr. Mayor, we would need to find out to make sure that there's an opening in that category.
Well, he lives in that neighborhood. No one, from my understanding, no one is on the nonprofit management side. Most everybody who sits on that side lives in other areas of the city. No one from that community is sitting on that nonprofit management. And I think that is wrong.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm suggesting we need to do this right procedurally. So we need to
go on it and approve it, but he needs to sit on that nonprofit management. And I need an update on the different ones between nonprofit management and housing. I didn't know there was a difference.
So do you want to approve this as we've got the motion in the second, and then we'll come back to that other issue?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any other discussions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you. You proceed now to your briefings, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Let's proceed to our briefings. I think we as a city should be proud of the progress we have made in crime and crime prevention and dropping the crime. I know that Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, leading the public safety committee, is very committed to this. She and I have challenged Ms. Soom and Chief Brown to make us one of the safest cities in America. We're making progress, but we still got some work to do. And that's what this is about, is to try to help craft different strategies and tactics to get us even safer than what we are right now. So thank you for your leadership, Chief, and would you explain what we've got?
Yes, if I can start out with kind of where we are statistically with crime before we go to the slides. The mayor challenged the police department in an inaugural address, and my ears perked up because I was listening for the challenge and what it would take for us to meet that challenge, moving from 7 to 5 on the comparisons of large cities' crime rates. And what that means for us is that cities like Philadelphia, Chicago, and Phoenix are ahead of us in this category. For us to move up from 7 to 5, we have to leap ahead of Chicago and Philadelphia to be at 5, and leap ahead of Phoenix to be at 4, and then there's New York, Los Angeles, and those other cities. And so what that means is that we have to have additional reductions. And that's a mouthful, because we've led every city in comparison with our reductions over the last 8 years. No city compares with the deep reductions we've had over the last 8 years. And actually, we've reduced crime. This is the 8th consecutive year. We're on the verge of making 8 consecutive years, which we have never done in our 130-year history, is reduced crime 8 consecutive years. But one of the categories of crime that has been minimally reduced is property crime. And why that's important is because property crime is 88% of total crime. It is crime when you talk about crime in Dallas. Violent crime is a very small number, although it's very sensational when it happens and gets quite a bit of news coverage. The minor petty theft really does drive the crime numbers. And so we looked at our current strategy and saw some shortcomings, and it led us to presenting to you our new approach to theft, starting with retail theft. And so we'll begin with this slide, really, which really goes over what I described as kind of our current status. Property crime affects not only our crime rate, it affects our economy in big ways. And what we discovered is there's a great loss of dollars from our retailers because of this organized retail theft. Some of the figures from the Texas Federation of Retailers quote $20 million in sales tax loss because of this type of crime. It not only affects their expansions, the retailers' expansions, but it affects their hiring decisions as well. Next slide. Dallas Police Department made about 4,800 arrests for petty thieves. Let's go to slide 3, please, not 4. Dallas is primarily a target because we're a large metroplex with a vibrant retail industry. About 4,800 arrests really is lower-level criminals who are petty thieves that work in an organization, in a criminal enterprise that really fuels and drives property crimes. And we're talking about shoplifts primarily, but every piece of stolen property has to be converted to cash in a black market, a secondary market. So a burglary, property sold from a burglary, has to get into this black market and get converted to cash. Every shoplift, every piece of property stolen from a car has to go into this black market that's very organized, and I'll talk about that some more in the later slides, but it's very organized. Our approach has been to look at the lower level criminals, our current approach. Basically, it's to catch a thief, trying to catch a shoplifter, trying to catch a burglar, as if they're acting independently and randomly and not organized. And what's important to recognize about our current strategy is that consequences for lower level property crimes are not really deterring property crimes, because there's not a lot of jail space for nonviolent crime offenders. We reserve the jail space primarily for our most violent people, and that's very understandable. And so these lower level thieves really don't have a consequence. And our current strategy really feeds into our activities around lower level thieves that end up in a revolving door. So we have an environment that facilitates this that's happening in an organized way. Next slide. This next slide depicts the criminal enterprise and how it works. The thief at the bottom left basically acts in an organization from a list of property that's hot items to be fenced. An example would be there would be maybe a pop technology product like iPads, and the crime boss at the top would ask the thief for 10 or 20 or 100 iPads that he had buyers for in this fencing black market. And this thief would then go out and steal these iPads and turn them over to the crime boss at, say, 20 cents on the dollar. The crime boss would then sell it to this figure on the right at 50 cents on the dollar. And this would happen on hot items and hot products throughout the year at various locations, not just at our malls. But if a thief can get an iPad that's laid down in the front seat of a car, that's still meeting the demands of this black market. And so this would be happening in large ways in organizations and criminal enterprises where 20 cents on the dollar is converted to 50 cents on the dollar at a flea market or a single source vendor. Or in many of our neighborhoods where we see property being sold out of the trunk of cars or on the corners of vacant lots, particularly during this season where we see much of the Christmas type items that people want to buy in some of our more blighted neighborhoods where this stolen product is being sold on the corner. And we buy it some unbeknownst or not knowing that these are stolen items probably because the price is below retail and in many cases below wholesale. And so one of the things that I like to convey to the public, if it sounds too good to be true on the price, it's probably stolen. And so these crooks take advantage of a low price point, and it fuels this black market, it fuels this illegal industry, and it drives our crime numbers up because you have such great demand for a low price product that's stolen. Tennis shoes is another hot item that people will buy out of a trunk of a car. You'll see these thieves on the corner with the shoes still in the box, stacked in rack as if it's a store, but in an open market, selling them for 50 cents on the dollar. And these are stolen items, and it's really fueling this illegal business. Our strategy really focused on arresting the thief. And some of the byproducts of arresting a thief, we would catch him and arrest maybe the third-party person that would probably at a lower level and probably more random arrest, where we would catch someone in possession of stolen property. Both of the crimes here are low-level crimes. You're in and out of jail. Not much consequence. There's not a lot of jail space for a low-level misdemeanor. Possession of stolen property and or stealing the property is a low-level misdemeanor. Class C misdemeanor, most of the time it's a fine, time served in jail. You really don't get a lot of convictions out of this because a lot of the witnesses don't show up. The delay in the system sometimes make witnesses forget about the details of what happened, so you don't get much consequence. If you're able to have an effect on this top figure, the boss, or the fence, that's a felony crime because it's an organized crime involving more than two people. And so what that does, it yields longer sentencing, high bails and high bonds, and you have an impact on the thief who doesn't now have someone to convert to 20 cents on the dollar for the stolen property. And that third party that's getting stolen property and making a deal for 50 cents on the dollar. So the byproduct of what the crime boss does is reduced based on an approach that we're taking to arrest the crime boss. Next slide. We needed to treat theft as a sophisticated, organized criminal enterprise rather than a single isolated random crime. one of the things that we had to do when we started out with the approach through our analysis is partner. Next slide, please. We needed to create partnerships with victims and prosecutors. And we needed to listen and understand what types of things or challenges that we faced in pursuing the crime boss and getting longer sentences and getting high bails and high bonds when we do arrest. These are the leveraged partners that we had to listen to in order to be more effective and more efficient in pursuing the fence, the crime boss. Here's what retailers expressed, and they had the highest victimization. They expressed that they had very much become frustrated with prosecution. Conviction rates for theft are at about 4%. If you look at this revolving door, if you have a thief caught or a burglar caught, you'll be lucky to get a week in jail. After sentencing, if you get 30 days, you're doing really well. And so you couldn't even keep someone in jail long enough for us to get any type of relief in crime reduction, even though we were making arrests. But we also expressed to retailers some concerns. We needed greater participation from them as fact witnesses in prosecutions. And we needed them to perform what's called straight filing of cases that they saw important. Not every case did a retailer want to pursue. Some of those cases that happened at their stores, they just wanted the person and the property back and the person off the property, but not necessarily wanted to pursue prostitution because of the cost of having an employee go to court, being away from the job. And so we asked retailers to participate in an affidavit program that commits them to serve as witnesses. And we also wanted them to commit to ensuring that we got their video evidence in a timely manner so that we could firm up prosecution. One of the things that's really going to be important with this new approach is that as we catch thieves, to have strong prosecutions for the theft so that we can get pleas around turning over the thief for the crime boss, which means you make a deal because you want to work your way up this criminal enterprise and not necessarily get the lower level thief in a revolving door system only. We'll continue to pursue sentencing for them, but we know those outcomes. The outcome we really want to affect property crime is long sentences for the crime boss. And so we want to work our way up this organization by having strong evidence from retailers, and we asked them to do that, and they agreed. We were spending an inordinate amount of time pursuing the lower level thief, and it was a very, very inefficient, ineffective way to reduce crime in the property crime area. Next slide. Our city prosecutors, I'm on slide 9. Our city prosecutors and our county prosecutor, DA's office, are also vital partners. We asked the city prosecutor's office to create a system to manage straight filing of lower level class C theft, where the retailer who was committed to pursuing a lower level crime could give adequate evidence to city prosecutors so that they could pursue higher conviction rates of these suspects. As I mentioned, class C theft, 4% conviction rate. That's no consequence. And so we asked prosecutors and retailers to create a system to where those conviction rates could move up. We needed a deterrent for the lower level thieves as well, so that we could use their convictions. Theft is a category that can be enhanced. It's one of the only categories in the Texas Penal Code to where if you commit more than one, now it's a higher grade crime. More than two, now it's a higher grade crime. So by getting low level convictions, you weren't able to enhance the crime and get longer sentencing. And so we wanted to enhance the convictions to get longer sentencing and to use that in our play to move up the organization and get the crime boss. So we asked the DA to provide more clarity also, the county DA, Mr. Watkins, to provide more clarity around criteria for strong prosecutions of organized retail theft. The Texas legislature, this last session, lowered the amount of property theft at $1,500 that we could pursue an organized crime case this last session. And so what we wanted is clear criteria from our county DA on what it would take for us to bring a case to them and get a conviction and a long sentence. And the DA is on board with us, along with our city prosecutor, in all of these criteria. That was the frustration expressed by retailers, is that we get these cases together, get to court, and nothing would happen, or very little would happen, and we wouldn't get our bang for our commitment. We wouldn't get increased prosecutions, and our property is just flying out of our stores up from the front and the back. And so we've got all of our leverage partners on the same page in this new approach. Next slide. One thing that retailers will provide for us during this new approach is products to use in police operations, both tracking and sting operations. So what I mean by tracking is that there's very sophisticated GPS technology that can be attached to property to track it from the thief to the fence to the flea market. And we'll know who touched that stolen piece of property. This is a very sophisticated crime. Much of the products that are stolen are sold on eBay and Craigslist and other online carriers. And so what we'll have to do is become very sophisticated as well, create our skill set so that we can track products online as well, products being stolen and advertised. One very sophisticated fence that we were aware of that we arrested was actually placing products for sale online that had not yet been stolen. So he would have orders, and the thieves would fill those orders by stealing that product that was already sold online. That's the sophistication of this crime. And it's driving our property crime number. Next slide. Go to 12, please. For 2012, we will be expanding our capacity and gathering the skill sets needed to pursue organized crime cases for these criminal enterprises. Success will be measured by the number of cases filed, longer sentencing, and reduced property crime. By reducing property crime during this new approach, it is one of the key things that will drive us toward achieving the goal of the safest city in the country. Remember, property crime is 88% of total crime. And now you may understand more clearly why. It's very sophisticated, very organized, and it's a high volume business. Number 13, this is what we want to happen. We want the crime boss to have a set of handcuffs on him. That's the key to reducing crime in this area. Next slide. Success will mean putting the right people in jail. The effects of success will be higher conviction rates, longer sentencing, for target offenders, the crime boss, and meeting our goal of continuing this decline. We've fallen off a cliff in reducing crime. If you see that red line going down, that's accurately depicting the reductions we've had over these last 8 years. And 2012 is fast approaching us. What we've done over these 8 years is just not good enough. We have to continue to push the envelope. We're only limited by our creativity. Next slide. And some of the residual effects of success using this new approach would also create greater economic vibrance for Dallas, because retailers now are made whole, revenues go up, expansions become possible, sales tax is impacted positively, and there's chances for hiring to be something that happens in Dallas as well, affecting our economy. summary slide just kind of really meets what we've been talking about clearly. We need to reorganize around retail theft, and we have leveraged our partners. We created a retail theft major crimes unit that investigates these crimes, focusing on the crime boss offense. And we're actually creating a model in this region that our partner cities, our suburban cities, are curious to see how successful we can be, and many of them also want to partner with us as we go forward to pursue this because they're affected as well by this type of crime. Question?
Thank you, Chief. Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Chief. If I could get Mr. Perkins, if you could come and join the Chief and Joey, and if you all could come up, and I want to just make a few comments. Chief, I appreciate the presentation, and those that know me know that I'm zero tolerance when it comes to crime, period. And I've heard the presentation, I heard you mention a few things, and hopefully what I'm about to try to demonstrate in my own way, and Mayor, thank you for allowing this presentation, is to help be a part of identifying and suggesting ways to enhance what you've presented. One, you talked of the crime rate and the fact that burglaries are running our crime rate up, and that's pretty much primarily where it is. And I guess my first thing would be, are they daytime burglaries or nighttime burglaries? And I'm not trying to put you on the spot at all, so I want to meet preference that, but I want to go through a little process.
Daytime.
And yeah, that's exactly what I thought it was, daytime. And with that being said, if the daytime burglary crime rate is up, how much of that could we attribute to truancy with kids going in as related to retail? You spoke of shoplifting and things of that nature, lower level crime. And Mayor, where I go with this is truancy with kids leaving the school, and when they leave schools, they go into the shopping areas, they go into the neighborhoods, they break into the homes, some, not all, but they break into homes, and it's an increase and an impact on our crime. Is that fair, or am I?
No, you're categorizing it correctly. One of the things that I do want to make sure I do make sure you understand. Burglary crime and property crime is down so far.
I understand
it's
that.
Not down enough to have the effect that we want on overall crime.
Absolutely.
So we need more reduction, not necessarily it's up. It's down this year, but it's down like 3%, not enough to have an effect on overall crime.
Right.
And juvenile crime does play a part of this, but what we've discovered through analysis is that it's so sophisticated and organized that the biggest driver of this is the organized adult criminal who's an habitual thief. At every moment that person is not in jail, they're stealing something.
Absolutely.
And that's what we found to be the reality. And until you affect this enterprise, you're not going to reduce mm-hmm. overall property crime.
And I agree with that. And on page 9, where we saw the city prosecutors and those conglomerates together, working together, I would ask us to go back and include DISD. I will not sit here and allow DISD to get off the hook, and then we, the city of Dallas and our taxpayers, we're faced with a higher crime with someone that has a truancy, and we need to get them into the loop so they can do a better job, as well as our DA and our city prosecutors working together to bring these numbers down. The 3% is great. I love to say that we are down 15, 20, 30%. So that's where I am. I'm satisfied the fact that we are making progress, but then there's still a lot of work to do. And in order to do that, we must have DISD involved with that. My comments are not going to be addressing the eBay and all of that. I want to now go into straight street. I'm a little bit more familiar with that. I'm not as familiar with how they're selling the stolen stuff on eBay. And one reason I want Joey to come and stand beside you, because code, Joey, you can get it right next to the chief. Come on, right there next to the chief. Because I feel, Mayor, that the two, and council members, that these two go together. code and the police. Now, Chief, you spoke about the illegal sale of, and this is what you said, on the street corners, on the vacant lots, and how they're selling tennis shoes on the street corner. Now I want to go and say that working together with code, and if code, and when we see the illegal people selling on the corners, then that should be something that should not take place at all. In other words, if indeed they are selling these items on the corners, and if indeed we have ordinances and laws in place, then the sale of merchandise on the corners that we spoke about during this presentation should not even take place. So if someone is selling tennis shoes, then I suggest to us that we collaborate together to make sure that we make it a point that the sale of tennis shoes on the corner of I-35 at Loop 12, the sale of pit bulls that's in the Village Fair Shopping Center, those people that are there, they should not be there. And if indeed we enforce with code and backed up with police, then we would eradicate that problem. And then my last thing, and I'll let other colleagues chime in here, but the last thing is that some of these folks, and it's not as organized as it is an organized set of crime bosses out here. I think the demonstration that you gave with the crime boss and the thief and the other person, that fits extremely well with the people out panhandling. When you look at the panhandlers that we have on the street, all of them did not wake up at the same time and say, let me go get a piece of cardboard, let me get a black marker pencil, let me write the same message, and let me be on every corner all around town. They're just not that smart, okay? And what happens is that those people are dropped off, and they are working and following that demonstration that you gave. The panhandlers are, because they collect the money, they are paid to collect the money, and then you have another boss over here that orchestrated and put together the whole thing. But as it relates to the crackheads is where I'm going, the people affected by drugs that are out here fencing and doing these things and breaking these, doing these crimes to go and get a $10 piece of crack cocaine to get a cheap high. Those are the folks that through the neighborhoods in conjunction with the other folks, the kids and things, that are breaking in people's houses, stealing the weed eaters, stealing the lawnmowers, stealing the water hoses, stealing the chairs and the plants off the front porches. And I'm not saying that there's not organized crime, but I'm saying that we need to also make a strong effort to concentrate on those little bitty things and help those little folks that are not a part of that organization but still are driving crime up. And then, Tom, last with you, since you're there, you appreciate it. Get on over there, Tom, just real quick. Meredith, last one. Take 30 seconds. All right. Let's get with, and I know that you have, our district attorney. Let's begin, and through our legislative effort and Mayor and Ms. Hill and whomever needs to come together, but let's begin to have more dialogue with the judges so the judges can understand. Maybe we should go and present this, Ms. Madrona, and have them to come and see and digest this problem and to show them the effect of the early release, as the Chief talked about, is something that we need to get a better handle on, and our DA Watkins as well. Because when our Dallas police go and arrest these people, you all arrest them, put your lives on the line, and you drop them off into the hands of the county. And then at that point, the county releases them back on our streets very quickly, and they sometimes beat the police back to the beat. And that is something that only legislatively and through you, Mr. Perkins, would help us get this message to the DA and to the judges as well, and other elected officials need be, that there needs to be a greater retention and not an early, quick release of these crimes and these criminals going back to our streets. Will y'all do that?
Yes, sir. All right.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway. Mr. Allen.
Chief Brown, I just want to applaud you for this new approach that you've got. But one of the things that you said, and I think this is the key to that I see to your leadership, that we're only limited by our creativity. And that's the whole that's in a nutshell. That's why with your leadership, crime will continue to go down. This is just an excellent approach, an excellent thought process that you put into this. It goes hand in hand with your thought process that you did with I Watch Dallas. And I think that's becoming even nationally recognized with your leadership, as I believe this will become, this new thought process will become. Your slide showed we're potentially losing $20 million a year in sales tax. $20 million, that's $55,000 a day. When it comes time for budget, we're going to fight for one swimming pool here and one swimming pool there. $55,000 to run a swimming pool. We can run swimming pool, 365 swimming pools. But, again, I just want to applaud you on your thought process that we are only limited by our creativity. Not doing business the same old way, but doing something different. And now you're becoming nationally recognized, which makes Dallas proud. So thanks for your leadership.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Atkins.
Again, Chief, I think Jerry said it all. Just a couple questions. You know, you look at the crime, and I went to the press conference, and I saw you had, you know, Kroger's, Kmart, and all the retail over there. And back to my background into the trucking and manufacturers, I think that's one group you missed out. I think you need to bring in the electronic companies who come here. If you look at in my district, I'm 20 and throughout the whole city and county, if you have a truckload iPad got stolen, that's a big crime that probably will increase numerous of crime. So we need to get with the manufacturer, we need to get with the trucking companies who haul those type of products and say, did our truck get stolen? Hiding it there. So if you got a truckloaders and a product and there was the 3,000 items on that truck, you might have 3,000 stealth, you know, who stole was going into. So I think that's something you need to look into.
Very good suggestion.
Thank you.
And we will do that.
Thank you. Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. We continue to talk about Craigslist and eBay. Have you guys contacted anyone from either one of those systems to find out what they can do to help us in this problem?
Actually, the police department hadn't, but the retailers have. And they had actually gone further at trying to solve this problem. The expertise they didn't have is the case filing, how to get a case filed properly with the DA. And so we were, because of our partnership with the retailers, now we have their expertise at our disposal in talking with those online subscribers. And so we're really excited about how the retailers' sophistication in this area and some of their loss prevention staff have the skill sets we need, and so we'll be learning a lot of some of the details and sophistication of how their products get tracked in their inventory systems, from the cargo delivery to the truck to the store, how it's stocked, how it goes out somewhere during that process with a theft, maybe an inside job, and then how some shoplifters come in and just really bum rush their stores with hot items and steal large quantities out of the front door. And so we have their expertise at our disposal, and we'll get our learning curve up to speed on the online effects based on their expertise.
And when you talk about the cargo, because I'm still trying to understand, Chief Brown, is the cargo coming in from overseas or wherever it may be coming? Are they stealing it from there? Are they stealing it when it gets to the store? And when you talk about the bum rushes, the people just going in one by one and just...
Let me explain a little bit more about how the product gets delivered. Because Dallas is a very, very good supply chain stop. A very big transportation hub. The legal business, it's thriving in this area. We're at the center of the country.
Mm-hmm.
We can supply the Midwest, West Coast, East Coast. Those same transportation supply lines can be used and are used for illegal supplies, both drugs and stolen products. And the sophistication around those supply chains is something that retailers understand that law enforcement needs to catch up to understanding, because cargo theft, like Mr. Atkins mentioned, is a player in this. How before the product even gets to a truck, it comes in on by train and by 18-wheelers as a big, large supply of cargo. And then it gets to the retailer's delivery, smaller trucks that go to the back of the store, and then it gets stopped, and then it gets put on the shelf. And so there's a big supply chain that's as sophisticated as what the thieves are doing. They catch it at the cargo delivery point, at the truck delivery point, doing stocking. Some employees facilitate the theft from the items that's being stocked inside the stores.
Mm-hmm.
And thieves obviously come through the front door stealing the product off the shelf.
And so you talk about the crime boss. Is this a part of organized crime, or is it just individuals who see a way to make some money and then having other people out to do this? Is this a part of organized crime, or are the two separate?
I would say, if you think about maybe a traditional definition of organized crime, you know, the Marlon Brando character in mm-hmm. Godfather, I would say that's not this.
Okay.
This is almost a mid-level supplier, and not maybe someone that's controlling drugs and stolen property in our city.
Okay.
But it's as sophisticated as some of the things that happens in the drug market.
Okay.
With the drug cartels, because there's large amounts of products flying through our legal supply chain.
And then
that's being stolen in that process.
And this is my last question. I do agree a little with my colleague, Ms. Caraway, is that making sure as we go through this process, for example, some part of the city, you have the mom and pop stores, the retail stores, and they might not be the big Walmart or the big Kmart. Let's please make sure that we look after them as well,
because
they have nice products in some of those stores, and I do a lot of shopping on Jefferson, and I go to the Bishop Art, and then even in my own district I do some shopping, and so I think you have some really nice stores in those areas as well, that we just need to make sure we pay close attention to those smaller stores as well, and make sure we can get them the same type of sophistication that we're going to be doing with the larger stores.
Great suggestion, and we'll do that.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chief, thank you for this presentation, this approach. Mr. Allen said that you've taken this new approach, and he complimented you on how smart you were in taking this new approach. I want to say you're just smart, period. So please know that from the beginning. Chief, I'm glad to see that you have brought to the attention of my colleagues some of the things that we see in the criminal justice system that I don't think the general public or many elected officials recognize. The jail space issue particularly, it is not so much that the prosecutors and the judges want to turn people back onto the streets. There is not space at the jails. I don't think we can build enough jail space to hold all the petty criminals, because we give priority to the higher crimes, as you indicated, as we should.
Yes.
We want to keep the murderers,
right,
those folks, the drug lords in jail for longer periods of time. As a result, the criminal justice system is clogged. And the judges and the prosecutors are doing the best they can to move those cases as quickly as possible in the way that fits within the facilities we have and the resources we have. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. I don't want us also to lose sight of the things that drive this crime problem. It is not simply a police problem. It is also a joblessness problem. People don't have money. They don't have jobs. They're going to do something to get money. and what thieves do as employment is steal. Another part of joblessness is unemployability. If you have people coming back from the penitentiary, lots of whom are African American and Hispanic, they cannot go out, fill out an application, and get a job immediately. And lots of those people give up hope and go back to what they were doing. I'm not excusing that behavior. I'm calling it to the public's attention. DISD. Mr. Caraway, we did address DISD. You'll remember I took the initiative on this about 2 years ago along with Officer Levi Davis and Chief Cato. We made a tremendous push and made tremendous headway,
yes,
with this DISD and truancy issue. And colleagues, as you recall, one of the things we did around that was pass the daytime curfew ordinance. The police department was especially instrumental in helping me with that. I started in District 5, but then we were able to push it citywide, and DISD is engaged because of that effort we made a couple of years ago. And Chief Brown, you'll remember that because you were involved, and you also were very helpful at that time, even though you weren't the chief. My final point is I hope this presentation and the things we do with our big bully pulpit as council members is to help educate the public. Don't buy the stuff. Thieves steal because there's somebody who's ordering it who's going to buy it. Stop buying it. Don't buy it out of the back of a truck. Don't buy tennis shoes that cost 50% less than they do in the store. Because some of the same people who are buying out of the back of the truck are then calling your office and mine talking about the high crime rate. Stop buying it. That is a public education plea from all of us. Chief Brown, again, thank you for what you're doing. You are doing an incredible, incredible job. As you said initially, it is unheard of for crime in big cities to go down 7 and now possibly 8 years in a row. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Michelle. One question. Is anybody doing this? I assume you kind of look at the best practices across the United States. Is anybody doing this in the United States, or are we kind of leading?
No, we're creating a new model. Actually, several law enforcement agencies are wanting to partner with us as we proceed forward in creating, because we'll be learning a lot. Our officers are really excited about this. This is really, you know, for a street cop, the high level work trying to get up an organization that's sophisticated and very complex. But we're creating a model. We're going to have a unit dedicated to this, and this will be their sole job, is pursuing these cases of organized crime in the property crime area. And so we're really excited and creating something new, and we hope very, very effective for us in reducing property crime.
Great. I think it's important to realize that we're kind of breaking new ground here, and many people will learn from us here. The other thing I wanted to say was I think there's some retailers in the audience here, and I just want to say thank you for your partnership in this. One of the big charts up there was that Venn diagram where you showed we're breaking down silos, and for us to work effectively in city management, we've got to break down these silos. And anytime we do that, I think we're successful. That takes a lot of leadership. It takes a lot of cooperation. Everybody can't just have it their way. They have to compromise. And so everybody around those colors, thank you for your compromise, and I think the city will be better for it in that regards. So thank you. Mr. Allen, you want to say one more word?
Just one last little follow-up. We talked about creativity, and we also, Judge Hill, talked about the criminal system involved, and I just hope as you go through this process, we hear the same excuses year after year after year on the criminal system, same excuse, same things year after year. Maybe your enthusiasm, your creativity can bring some creativity to their minds instead of hearing the same strong year after year after year. Thank you, Chief.
Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. Chief, as we get our weekly crime reports that we always do, and we get the backup, the details, and I know Ms. Margolin has a great website that, besides the overall what we covered in our press conference and the briefing today, how can we best utilize the detail portion of the weekly crime report that we then can educate our constituents, you know, the folks that, you know, are on our website and look to see what's the events, but also to educate them on this. What's the best way we could utilize these detail reports that we receive?
Much of what we want to do going forward is to be engaged with the community, your constituents, in much broader ways than we have in the past, and that's really a great segue into my next briefing. But in this area of organized retail, as you see these emerging crime trends, we can help you point you toward kind of areas that are emerging in the theft area. That would be a great conversation, a phone call to have with a crime watch chair in that area. Or if that emerging crime trend doesn't have neighborhood organizations, that would be a great way to reach out to those neighborhoods and explain the importance of neighborhood organizations, crime watch, neighborhood watch, and creating some leadership there where it's a void in leadership. And I'll talk about that in the next presentation. The safest neighborhoods in Dallas are the most organized neighborhoods in Dallas that look out for each other. Those are who have an engagement or a relationship with the police department that helps them reduce crime.
Thank you very much. I remember the last public safety committee meeting that we had, and we broke down the numbers, and basically it was if each council member would try to organize 8 more crime watch organizations in each of our districts, we would definitely be a much safer city, more informed anyway about what's happening. Thank you.
That's good. Ms. Carraway?
Yeah, and I'll make this short. Chief, and thank you, and Ms. Hill, as relate to the overcrowding of our facility, I agree with that, and I understand the judges and the decisions that they have to make. However, I still have one concern about that, and I'm trying to bring my concerns toward solutions. Maybe there's a need for us to go back to a city jail or city holding because, one, it's unfair when the drug user or the drug addict is taken back to loose spirit and is thrown in the same jail cell with the drug dealer that sold him the drugs, and where he needs to go to a place for help and assistance, in my opinion. And also, for someone that may have gotten just a ticket, it could be any one of us here that may have forgotten to pay a ticket, which I know we don't do that. But if that were to happen to you, and a warrant is out there, then they're going to take you to the jail, in which attributes to, and they'll throw you in there with the hard criminals, in which means that impounds on the overcrowdedness. So I guess I'm saying, long story short, non-violent crimes, criminals, people with tickets, people that may have written a check, people that are drug addicts, if we had another place that would hold those people, that would not and would release some of the pressure off of the county jail loose there, then maybe some of these other criminals can come in and be retained longer instead of having the innocent people there. I just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Ms. Carraway. As you said, Ms. Medrano's question was a good segue into your next from a prevention standpoint, so let's talk about that.
This next briefing will be a crime prevention and safety and health fair that we'll be pursuing to increase our community engagement footprint in this city, and we'll entitle it Chief on the Beat, and we will be pursuing a neighborhood based event. The event will be in neighborhoods, not at the patrol station, in a neighborhood where we'll have just a buffet of an array of partners there to not only engage me personally with conversations around crime and quality of life issues, but also an opportunity for citizens to talk with code and other and health issues and street and sanitation issues. Just all the city services could play a part in this. One of the things that this first slide really convey is the best way to deal with crime is to prevent it from happening. That's the best comment out of all the slides. If the microphone shut off right now, that you could get what I'm about to say with just that one comment. That the best way to deal with crime is to prevent it from happening. One of the things that I want to do during my tenure as chief is to institutionalize community engagement as a policing model philosophy. And I must caution you with this, because this is not widely accepted as the best way to police a city. As a matter of fact, we have a lot of internal debate in our department around whether or not this approach is the most appropriate approach in reducing crime. There's a segment in law enforcement and criminology and academia as well that argues between traditional policing, tickets and arrests, being more effective, and then there's a segment that argues engaging the community is more effective. But I'm going to insist and persuade members of our department and hopefully you all as policymakers that the most effective way of reducing crime is to prevent it from happening, and that you do that by engaging the community, getting citizens involved in all of our approaches to reducing crime. That is the story of the organized retail theft new approach. We engage retailers, our business community, in creating a new approach. And so that's example number one, that community engagement, community policing is the more effective way for the 21st century. Next slide. I want to use Chief on the Beat as a double down message. In other words, we've been debating this nationally in the law enforcement community, we're debating it internally in our, but I want to double down on my messaging about this being the way, and also I want to lead from the front. I don't want to ask officers to do something that I'm not willing to do by engaging the community, leading from the front. And also, this may be a very unique opportunity to expand even more our social media footprint through live tweeting at the Chief on the Beat event and live radio broadcasting using Urban Radio as a partner at these events as well. Next slide. Many of you have great personal experience with the 107020 program, which is a great example of engaging the community before an emergency happens, or not attached to an emergency. We actually engage by going door to door, surveying and understanding and listening to citizens' concerns and developing strategies around what the citizen is concerned about in the neighborhood, whether it be a quality of life, low-level crime issue, or something really high-level like drugs and prostitution and gambling and assault. But when you hear from the community, they become engaged and they become partners, and those interactions actually yield greater results in crime reduction. 107020 has averaged an 18% reduction in crime in the areas where this program has been implemented. And I want to give a special thanks to Levi Williams, who often goes by Levi Davis. But Levi Williams created this program. He's our civilian director of our community affairs unit, and he created this program from his professional expertise in the counseling area. He counsels drug abuse persons, and he took that experience and applied it and created this programming where you engage people and they are held responsible to actually play a part in the solution rather than only the police department being responsible for reducing crime. So I really want to give a special thanks and recognition to Levi Davis Williams. So, next slide. And we have a special guest that I'm asking to come in here to really depict my messaging on this next slide, because we want to roll in some of our youth programming partners with Chief on the Beat. Boy Scouts of America, Girl Scouts of America, Big Brothers Big Sisters, Texas Rangers Baseball, FC Dallas, and McGruff the Crime Dog, who has been stored away. McGruff the Crime Dog was a well-known mascot for police departments back in the 80s and 90s, and we got him out of storage for Chief on the Beat, and I think it's a great way to engage our youth in becoming partners in solutions to crime, and it really is, you know, a crime prevention opportunity for us, and a great photo op for you. So we really appreciate all of the things that McGruff can do for us in the way of engaging our youth and our adults who are young at heart. So McGruff will be a staple in Chief on the Beat. We'll bring him out of storage and make sure he's at these events and engage in the neighborhood and young people that attend Chief on the Beat. Thanks, McGruff. Woof. moving forward on slide number 6, I mentioned that the safest neighborhoods are the most organized neighborhoods, and that 107020 really can be enhanced by Chief on the Beat. We're planning 7 Chief on the Beat events next year in each of our 7 patrol divisions, and we want to integrate all of our activities with other city departments and other community partners. We want to dramatically increase the number of crime watches, and this would be one of the things we use as a precursor to creating neighborhood organization where none exists. So not only emerging crime trends would be something that we'd want to use as a criteria to prompt us to go to an area, but also no neighborhood organization where they have crime, we want to create that, and this would be a great precursor, because what we do in this event, a week before the event, we go out and we survey the neighborhood and put out notice that we're having the event, where it is and what time, and what will be available if they attend the event in the neighborhood, and then we obviously have the event, and then we follow up with other programming based on our survey responses from those citizens. Let's go to slide 8. Safety fairs, they help us engage community in a non-enforcement setting. Unfortunately, police officers sometimes are unpopular in neighborhoods because we're being called to basically put someone in jail. And we don't have 911 calls just to have a conversation. We don't normally have a crisis that we're responding to. And so to pursue relationships in a non-enforcement capacity is vitally important to create a real relationship void of a crisis. If you don't mind going to slide number 10, an example of a program that could come out of Chief on the Beat is something that we researched and were actually briefed by one of our lieutenants on, called Locks on the Blocks. This actually is a European program. I think it's Edinburgh, London, or one of the smaller cities over in Europe. Created this Locks on the Blocks program. What they discovered is many of their burglaries would occur because of poor locking mechanism on the doors and the windows. And they got sponsorship to provide the locks and the installation. When they looked at and did security surveys of homes in these high burglary locations, and the sponsorship provided the lock and the installation, after they determined, and their burglaries dropped 20% and 30% in those areas. And so we want to use that program. We want to take that program and bring it across the pond to Dallas, find a sponsorship that could provide the locks and installation that week before the event. We want to survey these homes and see what the conditions of the locks on the doors and windows are, and where we have deficiencies in, you know, the proper mechanisms to create better security, we'll have our sponsor provide that. And then we'll measure the results in that area of burglaries to see if we can get the same results that our friends overseas got in this area. So that's just some of the creativity things that we can use in this community engagement effort. Next slide. Go to number 13, please. These are our 7 patrol divisions and the patrol chief in those divisions. I think most of you know all of these chiefs, deputy chiefs. So in the future, what we want to do is I want to do 7. And then I'll be asking, because I'm leading from the front, I'm going to be asking these chiefs to recommend to me how many they could go out and do in their own divisions to kind of be a force multiplier of this philosophy, of this engagement tool that I think can be very, very successful in reducing crime. And so we've got a lot of opportunity here. We have about 500 very active crime watches in this city, a city of 1.1 million people. That's just not enough neighborhood organization. And so we want to really greatly and significantly expand the number of neighborhood organizations, crime watches in our area, so they can partner with us and help us reduce crime. Next slide. One of the other things that I'd like to try as a program partnership, many of our neighborhoods struggle with both drug abuse and mental health issues that play themselves out in 911 calls. And so I want to try to create partnerships with the mental health professional organizations and the drug abuse treatment professional organizations in Chief on the Beat, where they have a presence to convey awareness about treatment and its effects and social services available to their neighbors and loved ones in the neighborhoods where we're going to be in Chief on the Beat. And so, again, just we're limited by our own thinking on how this could really bring neighborhoods together and make them safer and make them healthy and whole. Question?
Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins.
Chief, I'm glad you're thinking out of the box, you know, with community engagement. You know, as you know, that one of my main concerns is, number one, I also like to thank Levi Williams for 10-7-20 in my district. You know, we had over 2 10-7-20. It was great, and crime had been reduced in some areas by 38%. My main concern is apartments. You know, I'm going to bring this up, and I think all my colleagues know for the last 4 years since I've been here, I kind of talk about one address or one block, Charleston. In Camp Wilson. And I think when the mayor, when he visits Ronnie McNair, we kind of walk over there, we talk to some people who live in the neighborhood who want to move out because of apartments there. What can we do different to increase the crime watch in departments? Those are the biggest concerns, especially with high crime. Even though you get all the homes, I mean, the apartments owners together, you get the manager together, they still have high crime. And one thing they're saying is that trespassing. They say if they know somebody doing something wrong, they put that person in jail, and they right back there again, and they still create the crime. So what is your philosophy? What do you think that we can do different to reduce crime in our apartments, and how can we make this work?
I think one of the things that we have to start thinking about in the way we think about apartments is think of it as a community. I think sometimes we think of it as individual citizens living in a building. But even though it's very transitional, many of our apartment communities are very transitional, but they are communities. Much like a neighborhood, I think Mr. Allen probably is taking the lead on this in the way he's engaging his apartment community. Some of the responses that we've gotten from his district by way of how the apartment community is engaged with a lot of programming involving youth. I think reaching out to our youth in apartment communities with both after school and summer programming is one of the keys. There's no silver bullet, but I think almost in every community, you get the kids involved, the parents come along. And so that's why I think that treating apartments as communities, really aggressive youth programming for after school and summer is an approach I think may yield some of the results we've been struggling to achieve.
So to engage, okay, if you look at some apartment units, it's like a gated community. You know, it's all in a gate, and they feel like that their responsibility, the owners, is just for the people in that corral. Now, to engage the department, the other nonprofits, there got to be some kind of connecting the dot so they know how to engage that. And you have to be the facilitator to make sure it's ongoing and someone checking up and see the right tools is there.
Right.
I guess, you know, when I grew up, in most of the apartments, they have community center inside the apartment. They had entertainment stuff going on inside the apartment. Most apartments do not have that anymore.
Right.
So it's nothing for the youth to do inside of the apartment complex because they don't have a family center.
Yes, and that's where Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, some of our sports franchises have gotten on board and partnered with us to help us in this area. Park and Rec can be a major player in having after school and summer youth programming that can help us in this area and finding facilities and playgrounds. And we had an interesting speaker at one of our retreats from my command staff. And the speaker said, you can tell whether or not there's crime in a neighborhood when the playgrounds have overgrown and disarray. He said when he comes to a city, this person speaking about how to reduce crime, he says he looks for what condition the playgrounds are in. And then he makes an assessment, this is not a safe place because the kids are not playing on the playground.
Right.
And I thought that was one of the more interesting comments that we had in our retreat, is that much of what we see in blight and crime is about the neighborhood's health, wholeness, resiliency, opportunities for play for kids and programs for kids that help them develop to be citizens, you know, fine citizens in our city. So that's where I'd like to pursue programming, not necessarily putting it all on the police to write a ticket or arrest, but put it on police to facilitate programming that affects some of these areas as a community. In apartment complexes are communities. They're neighborhoods within themselves.
Right. My last question. I know Jerry, you know, been doing a great job with his apartments over there. I know Linda and a whole lot of apartments standing. I would love, Chief, for you to come back and try to find some kind of pilot program that we can kind of duplicate and we can share with each other in each other district, that what can we do collectively to make sure that our crime can be reduced in the apartment complex. I think that is a big increase in crime, especially in the neighborhood when you got apartment complex and the residents there and they kind of cross over.
Okay.
Thank you. Michelle?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is Levi Williams sitting back there?
Yes, he is.
Stand up for a minute. Both of my seatmates claim that I called you Levi Davis. They may claim that. I didn't do that. You are Levi Williams, and the person who helped me with that truancy initiative was Levi Williams. Thank you, Levi Williams. The other person, Chief, I failed to give credit for helping me with that initiative, who was tremendously instrumental, was Chief Cheryl Scott.
Yes.
And a shameless personal public service announcement. If anyone is looking for a Boy Scout troop, Boy Scout Troop 279 meets at Concord Church on Monday nights at 7 o'clock, and my husband, Mr. Charles Hill, is the scoutmaster. We have plenty good room. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Very good. Very good.
There we go. Okay. Ms. Otto.
Thank you, Mayor. Chief, I'm very, very encouraged by your presentations today. I will say that you and I worked on the with the DA last year,
yes,
for special courts to handle some of these repeat offenders,
right,
and I'm hoping that that's still going forward. I
it
know that
very much so, Ms. Hobbs, so I'm encouraged. they're creating additional drug courts.
Yes.
Drug courts is the way to get to the root cause of the crime, because there's research showing that drug courts have less recidivism from those people in the system,
right,
and reductions in the way they commit crimes. So yes, it is still going forward.
And it has created a separateness that I think that Councilmember Caraway was talking about, and that certainly has helped. And I know the county is very, very elated that they have cut their numbers down below 6,000 of people in jail. I think if they go past 6,000 or 7,000, they get cited.
Yeah.
So they're doing a lot, and I think they're looking for more ideas from us. So that's good. Talking about the second program, Chief on the Beat.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
I do also want to thank Levi Williams, the 107020 program. I had my first one in my district last year, and the neighborhood was very appreciative. We got great response. They're still very appreciative, and it did result in another Crime Watch group. And in addition to that, we also established 3 more Crime Watch groups in District 1 in the last year. And that really is because we've had officers that were willing to come out at weird times. Saturdays, you know, seem to be a day for our folks to be able to get together. They can't do it on a weeknight. They can't do it during the day. So we've got to have officers available to be with them on a Saturday or a Sunday if they want. Those are primarily the days that my folks have time off. And we can't have officers responding to them by saying, I don't work on Saturday.
Right.
And we did hear that once.
Yes.
So I want to, again, thank you and the officers, especially that did come out to the Saturday meetings. As I said, 3 crime watches were established because of that. They continue to want to stay engaged, and we want to be sure and do that. So I look forward to the Southwest Fair, which is in June. And I want to also point out that Gay Revy, if you'll stand up, she is with our neighborhood group called The Dells, because every street ends in D-E-L-L in that area. And so, Gay, thank you for coming. She's gonna speak to us this afternoon about the wonderful things that are happening in The Dells district. And Gay has been one of our greatest organizers. We had a great night out, national night out. So we thank the officers for being with us. And thank you, Gay. You'll get a chance to come talk. Unless you want to give us some opinions at this point, I would be more than happy to call you to the microphone. Garage sale?
Let's hold that.
Okay, we'll hold it till this afternoon. Thank you. And then on your pilot programs, I know Jerry's been doing a lot with his apartment. We are now in our second and a half year of the anti-graffiti program, where we take a 7-foot pink and brown giraffe out to schools, and the giraffe engages them in understanding that graffiti is not good and that they could get a ticket if they're caught doing that. So I would offer Gina the costume to any pilot program that you might have. Again, it's engaging the little kids, and if you've got the little kids engaged, you're going to have the parents engaged. And that has been quite successful in the schools in District 1. And so, again, I would be more than happy to share, Gina, with you guys to talk, to really just kind of talk about graffiti. Thank,
thank you.
You.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. Can we go to page 10? Chief, is there any way we can put some of this in some type of booklet format so we can give to Neighborhood Crime Watch President? Because this is really good. So if I had this booklet, I could go to Personal Safety Education and give me some tips. Or if I had Home Security Education, I could go and say, you know, if my alarm is going off too much, what am I doing wrong? Then I can go to this particular booklet and to see and to tell me. Would I call in 311? And in the booklet it was said, if it's a false alarm, you will be charged whatever, only if you're not making sure this is happening. If we could do something, and I know there's costs involved in all of this, and I know we're dealing with a tight budget. If somehow, if it, and all our citizens is not going to go to the internet. I wish they would.
Right.
But if somewhere somehow we could get this in the hands, in a, and I'm not saying just go make a book. If we could do printed materials and then make an in-house manual, something like this, where you get the little styrofoam.
Yes.
And put it at the end,
yes.
Something that can save us some money. I think that would work. I really do like that, and I like that format.
Okay.
And we could take it to our neighborhood meetings, and we have budget meetings. Instead of having all this different sheet of paper, we can put it in all in one format. So I think that would be good. The other things on page 11. I think... our partners, Chief, it would be nice if you could do a day of appreciation to your partners. And if it's the schools, the foundation, the nonprofits, the sport franchise, and then invite us over as council members to thank them for all that they do. Working with the Dallas Police Department. I see that you have it here, but you might want to call a day of partnering. I don't know, something like that. That's only a suggestion.
Great idea. Thanks.
And then page 13, go back to the other page. If, could we have a copy of that in our office?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll get that for you.
And so we can tag it on our and give it to our administrators. So when people call, they will also know who's the deputy chief for their area.
Yeah.
And then we can kind of crisscross because we get calls from other districts as well. And then the other thing I want to say is our community prosecutors, Chief Brown, I'll talk about Daniel. Daniel is in the southeast,
mm-hmm.
and he's sure with Sheffy, Kadane, and I. And Daniel has gone into some areas in our district and just made a huge difference in that Ferguson area where there's a lot of apartments, and I know in Sheffy area as well. Am I right, Sheffy? And have just done some things working with the apartment managers, those who want to work. They brought in youth activity with the community prosecutors talking to the apartment managers. They have been able to have the apartment managers to sit down and talk with them and the police department. So I still think that the community prosecutors and the police, I think, work really well together, along with Cole.
Yeah.
All three of them working well together. So I know Mr. Atkins talked about high crimes in apartment complex, but in my district, my apartment complex, at least four of them, are now just doing extremely well. These were once really bad apartments. We brought in the community prosecutors, and they're just doing a really good job. So I'm saying that let's not forget about the community prosecutors as well to kind of work with you as we work through this partnership.
We will.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin.
Thank you, Chief, for a great presentation. And I know that
I see very clearly in my neighborhoods that when a neighborhood is organized, that crime really does come down when people are looking out for each other. Could you give an example of where you might hold one of these events? Because you said you're not going to hold them at the police station. So where might you be holding it?
Yes, one of the things that we want to try to do is create partnerships with the selection of the location as well. Some of the faith-based locations have been good. Their parking lots, church parking lots, some of the community centers in their parking lots. Because if there's inclement weather, you can go right inside. There's enough space to go right inside mm-hmm. and still hold the event if you have inclement weather. And also, I think an option is a neighborhood block where you block off the streets mm-hmm. and maybe at a, I don't know, where a dead end might be in a street. You take the last block of the dead end and have the neighborhood, if it's strategically located, where everyone can easily come to it. And that would be another thing, more like a block party.
Are you looking at higher crime areas?
Emerging crime and higher crime, along with additional criteria of maybe no neighborhood organization or leadership that has been partnering with us mm-hmm. along with that. So we'll be looking for opportunities okay. to organize neighborhoods and reduce crime. So that way when people on the beat moves on to something else, this neighborhood is organized in a way that facilitates crime reduction. It's just not a stop that we make and doesn't leave.
Right, and I know that seven is a lot for you to be at each one, and yet, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, where, you know, will there be one in my district? Maybe yes, maybe no.
Yes, there'll definitely be one in your district where you overlay, because some of the struggling neighborhoods, both in the Northeast Patrol Division are yours, mm-hmm. and some of the apartment communities, you have a little small piece of that on the North End, North Central Division, mm-hmm. and so there's a great opportunity for one to either be in or near the borders of your district.
Okay, and I appreciate that you're encouraging your deputy chiefs to carry this on as well.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson?
Thank you. Chief, I was wondering, you talked in your presentation about working with social service agencies to help address some of these concerns that come out of neighborhoods like mental illness issues. Do you work with the city's crisis intervention team?
Yes, we do. We actually, last year, or year before last, they came under the umbrella of the police department, so we manage them, and they report to Levi Williams.
Good.
And so they come with us to these events and set up a table. And they're there to facilitate any concerns.
Oh, good, because I didn't know about that reorganization, at least that part of it. So I've always found them to be really, really helpful in addressing issues such as mental illness, someone in the neighborhood creating disruptions.
Right.
So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Chief Brown, for all you've done for us and all your efforts that you've put in, and the good things have happened from them too. In our neighborhood in East Dallas, you may know, we probably got more crime watches than anybody in the city, and it really, really helps. And I preach that to my neighborhoods. Every meeting I go to, we even have, most of them have VIPs, which really helps a lot. One of the biggest deterrents in our neighborhoods is when they see the police car.
Yes.
So I'd love to see more drive-thrus if we can, out of any cost. It just makes a big difference when the police car is there and people see them driving through. Our safety fair that Jerry and I have every year, I think it doubled this year, I think, didn't it? Yeah, we've got, we get more and more and more every year. It's a fantastic event. People come, they see what the police and everyone else is doing.
Right.
So they're really good and they really work.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. And these education programs, I think, are going to be excellent. And we've just got to find a way to get our people to come to them.
Yeah.
So But thank you for keeping us up. And we have quarterly meetings on our neighborhood crime watches. And we get them all in there,
yes,
which is fantastic. And everybody sees what's going on, what's happening in each other's neighborhoods. So those are great events also. And maybe events like that, we can do some of these programs.
Yes.
So that would be really good. But thank you so much for all you've put in and done.
Thank you, Mr. Cadet. Great suggestion.
Thank you, Mr. Cadet. Mr. Allen?
You know, these safety fairs really are a great way to engage the citizens that are, and also bringing in the nonprofits and the faith base, because we're all in this together at the end of the day. It's my opinion that the majority of people are inherently good. All they want is a better quality of life. We'd mentioned the multifamilies and your attitude towards the multifamily. Half of our population of the city of Dallas, half of our households are residential and half are multifamily. And that's the homes. It's half and half. So half of the folks live in a multifamily environment. You use the word community, and that's exactly what those are. When we start looking at them instead of really negative, but looking at them as truly, these are homes for folks, and they live in this community. I might have, and I've used this example before, and one of my great communities is Hamilton Park. They have 720 homes in Hamilton Park, and I just referred to Hamilton Park as a community with homes. In the old days, I might have talked as the Indigo Apartments, as the Indigo Apartments with 1,200 units. Well, those days are gone. It's the Indigo community with 1,200 homes in that community. And so as we change these attitudes and with the understanding that people are inherently good and they do just want a better quality of life for their kids, it's been great with the use of law enforcement, with the use of our community prosecutors to go in and make sure that these communities are clean and safe, and that the owners understand that they will be clean, they will be safe,
right,
and they will provide, because it's an economic model, they will provide after-school activities and provide recreational-type activities for their
right.
citizens, because, again, that's an economic model for them. They also understand how important it is that the local schools around them are do well, because that's what keeps those families that want to stay put in that community. And so those multifamily communities then start to contribute to the PTAs and become involved in that. And that's because they are part of that community. But, you know, I'm preaching to the choir. Yes, you're the man out front on this.
Amen, brother.
That's it. So I could go on forever. But these are good times. Good things are happening. Things are moving forward. And so look forward to continue to work with you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Caraway?
Thank you, Mayor. And Chief, I come with a lot of compliments. One, to Mr. Levi Davis Williams in the back. The 10-70-20 plan has worked. The community prosecutors, that working in conjunction with the police, it has proven to be extremely effective, especially in my district and all over the city, as we are now hearing. When I say I come with kudos, there was a time when you could not walk down Crest Avenue, but because of the hard work that the police department you all put forth, and Mr. Levi Williams and the 10-70-20, now the drug dealers, the prostitutes, the clogging up that street, the threshold threat that they had on that neighborhood. You can walk down Crest Street. You don't have to dodge pit bulls. You're not dealing with drug dealers. So that's a testament. Then the other that we read about so often in the Dallas Morning News, the 3,000 block of Alabama. It has just taken us years to accomplish the goal. We still have ways to go, but when you all came over with the program, and Mr. Williams and yourself and the 10-70-20 plan, we finally got a handle on Alabama. It's not off of our list, off of our radar screen,
But we had repeated people, Mayor, in that area that held that neighborhood hostage. And finally, now, Alabama, there are houses going up and kids beginning to have the opportunity to play in the street. We still have work to do in that area,
right,
so I won't let it off the hook. But I want to compliment you for that. Also, in closing, what do we do with the kids? I wanted to ask you, as it relates to Midnight Basketball and Sheldon Smith, Officer Sheldon Smith, and the Midnight Basketball program, and also the boxing, the police boxing, to give those kids something to do, and on the weekends, I think that those programs, I know that they're in motion, some of them, but I'd like to see a greater enhancement of that programs to give kids something to do on Friday nights and Saturday nights with the Midnight Basketball, so they can put that energy into challenging one another versus being criminals on the street.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I hope to bring back really exciting good news once I get confirmation from the Dallas Mavericks. But during the lockout of the NBA season, we had contact with Donnie Nelson,
mm-hmm.
The president of the Mavericks, and he's really excited about partnering with us to help us in our youth programming around basketball, becoming a partner with the PD. And then the lockout was lifted, and so his schedule's been really busy, so we've been trying to get back with him, but I'm sure his time is...
See me on that.
Okay, thank you, Mayor, but we just need another step in the process, and then we can take off on whatever partnership we end up having.
So. Okay, and I want to just say thank you to that, and Mayor, that's a good move, and thank you, Chief, for all those things. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Alonzo.
Chief, thank you very much for that information, and I wanted to also indicate that, as you mentioned, in regards to making sure that we follow along, we need to make sure that we communicate. We have good communication and good information for our constituents of us so that we can combat this crime. Not to mention, as far as communication and information, we're going to have a crime summit this Saturday, as I'm sure you're aware, in West Dallas, so that's another area that we also need to work on very, very hard. And speaking of working very hard, I remember when I was a park board member, I would go with my council member to the National Night Out, and I remember it used to be like 3. This year, I went to 7.
Yes.
So that's why it's important that we communicate, we inform, so that way we let them know, and it's great that they have taken that initiative to start those crime watches, to work with them. In one of the 7, they had over 150 people.
Wow.
In one area, which is West Dallas, which is La Bajada. In the other area, they had close to 300 people, which is
wow.
In the Bachman Lake area, because they joined in, as you talk about apartments, they joined with the apartment association in that area, which is very, very good and very helpful, very informative,
yes.
Both Spanish and English, which is what the summit is going to do as well. So in conclusion, I would say Crime Watch groups, neighborhoods, and the Dallas Police Department with the City of Dallas, it's a great partnership.
Thank
so
you.
I look forward for that, assisting and continuing with that effort,
yes,
and making sure that, not to mention, that the information that your department provides us, that we share with our constituency, we let them know. We tell them that, you know, if there's crimes and what kind of crimes occurred, and when there's no crime, particularly in, like, for example, in La Bajada, that we tell them, you know why there's no crimes shown there? Because you guys are taking that initiative.
That's right.
So we want to make sure that we indicate that, and please state to your staff that they are very helpful, very informative, and they always been a great participant of neighborhood, meetings. When they are invited, they participate, they come in, and they share with us the information so that we can be able to combat that crime. Thank
you
very much.
I'll pass that on to
you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Ms. Alonso, great point. I have a 1070-20 program right now in one of my neighborhoods. This is the fifth neighborhood that has this 1070-20 program. Thus far, its decrease in crime is 9.5%, and Mayor is within the largest tag area in the city that was featured in the point section of Morning News. They've done some really neat things that, and as this, the presentation says, improves the quality of life in the neighborhood, and it has. It has really done a major impact in the area. We are now working on a couple of other things along with that Crime Watch and other Crime Watch organizations in that area. Now have come to come and meet with us because they want to implement some of the things that we are doing, so that's good. Another area that I believe that should be another partner, it should be DHA. In that 10-70-20 program that we have in East Dallas, we have brought in the liaison for DHA because DHA housing is sporadically, you know, it's in the mix and in part of that area. So I think that's really good. Another thing, as Ms. Margolin just mentioned, in the Cedars, just south of of City Hall, the Crime Watch neighborhoods have gotten together, and they have contacted with their neighborhood police officer the owners of vacant lots. It is amazing. 6 blocks south of City Hall, you can go by there. They have an agreement with the owner of the vacant lot. They have mowed the vacant lot. The businesses are helping out. They've created a playground for the neighborhood kids that used to play on the streets. Now they play on the vacant lot. We had our national night out there. I didn't want to leave. That was my last place to go. I mean, it was pitch dark. No one wanted to leave, and there was a few people, they said, don't leave, we have lanterns. So they went to the garage and they brought back, and they had movies for the kids, and they had a piñata on one side, and everybody brought food, and it was, tons of officers were there. We had such a great time. But because of that, an owner of an adjacent property with a vacant building has now cleared all the debris and brush there, has cleared out a building, and has now dedicated that building as a community center for the community. With a lot, the artists in the Cedars, they now are going to start art classes. A lady that sews will start sewing classes, and then they're going to put a couple of hoops there for the kids that want to play basketball. But this is something that, you know, the property owner, I spoke to him when we were cleaning out the debris, and he said, you know, my property is just minor. It's not going to sell. He goes, let's put it to good use. So I will commend the neighborhood police officer, Officer Sean Crow, has helped tremendously with this effort, and needless to say, the crime has definitely gone down in the area. So if you have an opportunity, the property is on Hickory and Gould, and it is expanding now to about 6 properties now. The property owners just say, you know, we want to share in this. So you'll see lawn furniture out in the vacant lots, and it's a really nice way of connecting the Cedars transit stop, the DART transit stop, into the neighborhood. So they've got little safe spots for folks walking to and from the train station. So anyway, it's very, very good. I'd like for you to come and visit.
Well,
there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Chief and the Council, for all the passion. This is obviously important to this group. I do have one question. Just philosophically, you said there's a debate about this strategy. The intelligent people on the other side are saying why? What are they saying, that this strategy doesn't work because of what, or is it?
This is a little bit of a revisionist history. Community policing was started in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And so some of the things that happened in the 80s, street cops just didn't like. They saw relationship building as being away from kind of the things that they hired on to do, basically. And so it's difficult, particularly young cops, to understand a broader effort in engaging communities sometimes. And we have a great opportunity here because I think the way we're describing community engagement speaks to being able to arrest bad guys as well, because we want to engage citizens purposefully in ways that reduce crime. Our conversations are around what citizens know about criminals in the neighborhood. That information is passed on to our intelligence center, and officers act on what citizens say are crime concerns, and they're able to actually solve crimes at a much in a much better way, much more efficiently. Intelligence information conversations with citizens are put into a matrix, and they're put into databases, and we can pursue investigations. And so the opportunity to describe what we're wanting to do by engaging the community really does lead to police action.
I'm not arguing
so
that.
The debate is an old revisionist 1980s debate.
That they just say you don't catch, you're being nice to people, but you're not out catching criminals?
That's part of the argument.
Spend the time catching criminals, and okay, gotcha.
So we're doing both and.
Okay.
We're creating relationships so that we can catch criminals, so we can make neighborhoods safer. So
good.
It speaks to both of the concerns.
That's great, and thanks for leading from the front on this by having these events. I'll do the same thing. I'm trying to get to know your deputy chief, so
yeah.
When they go on their own, have them invite me. I'd like to be with them, and
that's a great idea.
And we can get out and see this firsthand in all these communities. Thank you very much. Before we do this, okay, let me just do a little housekeeping. Okay, we were going to break at this point, and some people were going to go to the Speaker of the House's luncheon today, or I was told that, and then we were going to come back and have an executive session, and then we were going to have our open mic speakers. Okay, I'm curious. How many open mic speakers are here? So there's what? Okay, so there's four or five here. I want to try to be nice to everybody. That's what I'm trying to figure out here. Is anybody are people going to lunch? I mean, are people going to the luncheon? Great. Okay, then let's keep the current plan. So what we're going to do is we'll do one piece of business, and then we will adjourn till 1:45 for executive session, then we'll come back for the special speakers and keep it the way it was currently planned. Right here, the executive session, we'll go ahead and have it here. What's that? Because people are going to this lunch. Yeah, no. There's definitely not enough time for these. So let me recognize Mr. Cadane and Ms. Davis.
Thank you. Well, I'll tell you, we got two special days today, and I've got the girl, and Carolyn's got the boy. And what I thought is they ought to sing a duet to each other.
Yeah.
But we won't make you do that. So we've got Angela Hunt, and we've got Scott Griggs. It's happy birthday. Everybody ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's sing. Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Scott. Happy birthday to you.
And the cakes will be back in the room.
Uh-oh.
What's that?
We're gonna dance.
Oh, dance.
Yeah.
I doubt that.
I'll tell you what. Don't anybody eat their dessert today, and we'll eat it back here.
That's good.
When we reach
All right. Dinner. It is now 11:13 a.m., December 7, 2011. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda. Thomas Hannon v. David L. Nevitt et al., National Solid Waste Management Associate et al. V. City of Dallas will readjourn in that executive session at 1:45. Thank you. What? Did I do that?
Yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah. No, I was trying to figure out, but I don't think we got enough time because people have to go to that lunch. What? Yeah. 11:30 or now 1.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're going to go ahead and proceed with your afternoon speakers. Your first speaker will be Gay Revy, Arvell Hairston, Frank Ward, Phyllis Gift, Gilbert Warren, Jr. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You will address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Gay Revy. Hope I pronounced your name correctly.
Good afternoon. My name is Gay Revy, and I live at 3331 Burlingdale. I'm here today to say thank you, thank you, thank you for requiring a permit and fee for garage sales. Our neighborhood is a busy one. The Bells District abuts the intersection of Jefferson and Westmoreland. We have never had problems with residents holding sales once or twice.
Let's listen to Ms. Revy, okay?
We have never had a problem with neighbors having garage sales once or twice a year. But we have been invaded locally by commercial sellers. They unload their U-Haul trucks on 2 or 3 yards and sell new merchandise. Here's a typical load. 50 pairs of jeans, 4 cases of shampoo and conditioner, 10 counterfeit designer handbags, a dozen desk chairs, 8 tires and rims, and 3 toilets. And these people had a permit from the city. These sellers have regular followers. They park on the sidewalks, at the ends of the driveways, and on both sides of our streets. There is no way an emergency vehicle could navigate our narrow streets. Thanks to the new permit system, though, these sales are no longer the rule, they are the exception. We have seen these sales in our neighborhood decrease by 50% this year. There's no way our neighborhood association could have done this alone. We have worked closely with our code officer, Lori Fielden, and Paul Ramon, district manager of Southwest Code. And all of us working together have made a difference. There is a loophole in the system, however, and I'm asking for you to change it. Right now, a person can go from library to library to library and get several garage sale permits. So please require that every person who gets a garage sale permit shows an ID. Require that the person's address on the ID matches the address of the sale. Require that the location of the sale be placed on the permit. Sometimes this isn't done. And several sales in our neighborhood have been hailed on houses and in property that have been vacant for months. And finally, 1 permit per person per year. Based on the experiences in our neighborhood, I'm sure that if you tighten up these requirements, we'll get rid of these serial sellers in our neighborhood. Thank you.
Mayor? Yes, Ms. Revy. First of all, thanks for staying around. Mr. Carraway.
Ms. Revy.
Yes, sir.
You know, let me stand up for a minute and salute you and take a bow. You know, when I introduced this garage sale fee, I'm telling you, I'm coming over there, Ms. Hassel, and then Ms. Hassel and I joined in together. We took a lot of heat about this garage sale permit. And to hear someone to come down after all that heat, Ms. Hassel, and tell us that we did the right thing, and it helped, and you reduced that by 50%.
Yes.
And those 18-wheelers and truckloads of businesses, how they manipulated and utilized it. Ms. Hassel, I just want to say thank you for us being a team with that, and thanks to this council, those that voted for this. It was very, very important, and I hope that the people are listening to our voices about the garage sale fee, and it helped. And I just want to hear you say that one more time that it helped.
Oh, it helped immensely. We couldn't have done it by ourselves.
Thank you,
Ms. Carraway. Ms. Hunt?
I sat here this morning, and you talked about stolen property, but here it is.
Yeah. Ms. Hunt?
I was just going to say, can we get a copy of what you wrote here? And for us, I would like us to brief this in front of the Quality of Life Committee. Just give us an update on how the ordinance is working, and if we could grab these recommendations from her, because I thought she had some really good concrete recommendations. And lastly, I'm very pleased to hear that this is working the way it was intended to work. I would also say, however, that there are some residents in other parts of the city, at least some folks that I represent, who, where we don't have the problem of folks using garage sales as a retail center. And some of the regular folks who just want to have garage sales are a little frustrated with the permit process. So if we can if we could fine-tune it a little bit to wrap up the problems that she's talking about while also maybe allowing for regular residents to have garage sales, I think we'd really have a terrific ordinance. Thank you, Mayor.
Ms. Hassel?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And thank you to Councilmember Chairway and Hunt. It really was a... a very difficult thing to do when we decided to do this, but I think after hearing Ms. Reedy today, it really does show that we can start curtailing these problems, and it just dovetailed into the presentation that Chief Brown gave us this morning on people, what's happening with the theft of goods and the theft of goods and also the theft of 18-wheelers, because those are also a problem. So thank you, Ms. Reedy, for coming down and for sticking around. And I look forward to adjusting that ordinance. And thank you, Councilmember Hunt, for providing that. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a question. So these people that are selling 50 pairs of jeans and 4 cases of shampoo are legal if they get the permit? I don't know who to ask that question to.
Reselling new products is already illegal, actually.
It's illegal?
It is illegal. So whenever we go there and we see products that are bought from somewhere else and being resold, bottles of new shampoo and jeans that they still have tags on them, not used, not worn, it's illegal.
So if she saw somebody doing that and reported them, could it be tracked and they would not get the permit next time?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Joey, I have a follow-up.
Yes, please, Mr.
Joey, but as Ms. Ruby had mentioned, they're at a business corner stop, right, at a corner, not at a place, at a home? No, they're
driving
in
the
front yard of
homes that are vacant. Okay. And that's illegal as well.
All right.
That is illegal as well.
But what Chief Brown mentioned today, if they're at a business corner, that's totally illegal.
Completely, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Rios?
Your next speaker is Arvell Hairston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. I had a speech, but I lost it on my Joy phone while I was staying at the Salvation Army. I'm a homeless vet. I served in the Vietnam era, and I have a service-connected injury. It's hard for me to find housing.
Would you please talk into the mic? Thanks.
Did anybody hear what I said?
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm a 57-year-old homeless veteran out of the Vietnam era. I'm waiting for my benefits to start, which I never asked for 36 years. I became homeless because I have a broken neck. Recently, I was given a citation for staying in a home that was considered a boarding home, put in jail, and I was written a ticket. Now, I defended myself in court, and I was exonerated, but I lost my VA benefits because I was in a grant per diem program because I'm a multiple-degreed engineer from MIT. I'm the face of homeless people on the street. I am not ignorant, I am not illiterate, and I'm well-educated. This can happen to anybody, but there's a stigma on us out there. This has happened to me by no fault of my own. And I'm here to be the voice of a lot of people. I just did the stew pot, the bridge. I currently live at the Salvation Army, but not in the VA section anymore, simply because I was accused of being a drug addict, and just basically because I'm homeless. And I help people. I have a class called Mechatronics that out of my pocket, I help disenfranchise people. I was only exonerated by a jury of my peers because I told that story. Otherwise, I was a criminal just because I was homeless. We need some help out here. I had an Android phone that I lost because I was, you know, kind of nervous for coming here. I've been to Omaha. I've been to Kansas City Standout, and I ended up here in Dallas. I'm the guy that designed Los Colinas Network and the Frisco Mall. Isn't that a shame that can happen to people? And I serve my country faithfully. I carry an 80-pound backpack. I've got a fractured neck and blown-out knees. I'm not a penny from it from Uncle Sam. But I continue to help other people even though I'm disadvantaged. I want y'all to know there's a problem out here. We need some help. I call several people over and over. I get no help. I can go to social services, but they give out pennies. I grow food, flowers, I refurbish laptops, and I give people free education just to help people to get their chins off their chest. I need some help. We need some help. I served y'all. So y'all can have this stuff open and free. I put my life on the line. But I get kicked down every day. Every day. And I don't know what else to do. I didn't even know this existed, this venue. I'm out there on the street, on the train, talking and helping people every day. If I have to come here every Wednesday, I'm going to do that. And I'm begging and praying that something's going to happen. I got 3 seconds, and I hope the coach isn't going to freeze me on this kick. Because I want to win this game. And it's not just for me. It could happen to you. And this is what I was going to say, but this is what I got from the hip. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison.
Okay, your next speaker is Frank Ward. Frank Ward is not present. Phyllis Guest. Phyllis Guest is not present. Gilbert Warren Jr. Not present. Joe Adam Hernandez. Not present. Ozumba Lunk. Not present. Richard Sousa. Richard Sousa. Not present. Robert Cacciarelli. Next speaker will be Marvin Crenshaw and Wayne Wooten.
Yeah, Robert Cacciarelli, 5302 Harry Hines Boulevard. I'm going to change the subject this week. I'm going to get back to the homeless next week. I have some information, new information I got from MDHA. I'm going to share with you about how much it costs to be out of housing before you get supportive housing. But today, I want to talk about in September, I was at Lincoln High School. And I spoke about how high schools can improve from unaccessible to acceptable. Right? Now, this is very important for our homeless too because you need a good education. What I said was, is that in DISD, there's 90-minute blocks each period, 4 periods, 90-minute blocks. What I said in front of Ms. Nuttall and Dallas Morning News and the principal at Lincoln was that the teachers would teach 60 minutes or 45 minutes of instruction, period one. The second period would be 45 minutes or 30 minutes of tutoring and homework of that same subject with the teacher. And that would continue throughout the day. This would improve immaculately that the students would stay in school to do their work and not go out of school where I would hope we would think it would be very hard for them to do it. Now, this would also solve the problem with the teachers union with the teacher evaluations that have been made, been a big stink lately. This way, the teachers would be 100% accountable to the students, instruction and tutoring and homework. All right? Now, I suggest that 2 schools be done. They're unacceptable and see if it works. Now, when I said this, the parents loved it. I got an ovation from it. Now, the only thing that has to be done is to increase the school year from 10 months to a year because you're going to lose some instruction time. But this would keep the teacher accountable and the teacher evaluations, I will see no problem with the teacher using accepting it and the parents would know that the teachers would be helping their students for at least 30 or 45 minutes with instruction time for tutoring. And I would say give it a try for 1 year for the 2 most unacceptable schools and see how it works. Everything else has failed, and this way the teacher can be there for the student instruction time and homework. Now, like I said, the parents liked it. I just hope that you can carry it over to the school board and see if it flies. I don't know what city council members are. Mr. Atkins, you're over at Lincoln High School? I believe, or so. Oh, Miss Davis. So one more thing is, one more problem is with the students that are causing problems so that way the teachers can be able to teach. But like I said, my time is up. I hope you carry it over. And next week I'll bring them more information about the homeless, and I'm sure when I see Mike Cianza and Kim Horner tomorrow, I hope they come too, and that way we can get this settled too. But please bring it over to the school council, the school district, and please talk to Ms. Nuttall. Please talk to the principal and see if they've been verified. I got an ovation from the parents.
Thank you, Mr. Grohl.
The next speaker is Marvin Crenshaw. Not present. Your final speaker this afternoon is Gwen Wooten.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Wooten. I'm a native born Dallasite. Been in Dallas all my life. And I'm going to have this pass out to y'all. Mr. Sheriff. Oh, I want y'all to read this. Maybe y'all didn't read it. But y'all got so excited about this garage sale stuff where Popo's trying to make them some money, keep them stealing from y'all. I don't see nobody excited about $1 billion being stolen from poverty-stricken people in this city. Under the leadership of the city of Dallas, according to Jim Schuster in the Dallas Observer. I've been an advocate for housing in this city since I know housing was being torn down for poverty-stricken people. Over $1 billion has been taken from the housing market for poor people so that upper middle class and moderate income and rich white folks could live where I grew up. In the state of Thomas Ferry, where I went to school, where I walked down Thomas Avenue from Hall Street to Pearl. Over $1 billion have been stolen from poor people in this city. There's no housing in this city for poverty-stricken people. Now, I don't know where y'all come from, but I'm from Dallas. And there's always been poverty-stricken people in this city ever since John Bryan came down here and threw down that tree and built that little house he got down there on Ellen. And there are still homeless people here. We have a community full of empty apartments on Live Oak, Sanders Center, Bryan Street. All of them built for upper-income people with poverty-stricken people's money. And y'all sitting down here talking about a garage sale. It's crazy. I was with them children on Kennedy's memorial down there. Them children put so much stuff in my head that I had to talk to Sharon and try to settle down so I could get some of y'all European mentality. And he kind of helped me out, but y'all is driving me crazy. Because the more I find out about billions of dollars being stolen from poor people in this city, and y'all sitting up here talking about a garage sale, it's crazy. When you got people who ride on the back of a truck every day, you don't know where they come from and where they going. And they going through your community looking at your address and seeing if you at home and not to be in the other day while you sitting up here. It's time for y'all to get real. Because all you imitation like black folks down here pretending to be white folks, y'all need to pick up and get up. Y'all need to get up and stop this. $1 billion stolen from poor people. Now that's a priority. And whoever stole it needs to go to jail. I don't care if it's there in front of all the University Park where they live. I want them to go to jail. Bye.
That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other business before City Council? Hearing none. Meeting is adjourned at 2:53.